basic metrics of collision by the transpose we have already under transpose. In what matrix inverse, what matrix trace, and what matrix run, what matrix determinant, stuff like that. So we have a lot of metric concept, but I've already told you that. So the most fundamental concept in algebra is linear inverse. So you need to go check or recap what's linear independence and how it is related to matrix rank, matrix inverse, stuff like that. And a matrix concept such as eigenvalue, eigenvectors, and also orthogonality, stuff like that. And definition, probability distribution. So probability distribution. So if someone asks you, so what's a probability distribution? The answer should be simple and neat. So a probability distribution is a function theory. A probability distribution is a function. And this function, so for function, we need to figure out what are the input domain, what are the output domain, right? So the input domain of this function is what's so called a sample space. The sample space is input domain. The output domain is real number. So that's a function. So this function should satisfy the following conditions. The first is non-negativity. P of little omega should be greater than equal to zero for all omega in its input domain, in its sample space. The second is normalization. P of elements in the whole sample space equal omega is should be one. That's normalization. The third is additivity. If omega prime represents two subsets of the sample space, the subsets of the sample space in probability theory is called events. So events is a subset of the sample space in probability theory. So if two events are disjoint, disjoint means that in the Venn diagram they don't overlap. So that's disjoint. Therefore, the probability of the union is equal to the sum of the respective probabilities. So those are the three conditions to constrain this function. And these three conditions are known as the three axioms of it. And what's random variable? What's random variable? So don't answer a random variable is a random. So the answer should also be simple and neat. A random variable is a function. Or a random variable is defined by a function. That's it. Alright? So a random variable is defined by a function f subscript x that maps each element dot omega of the sample space. Therefore, this function has input domain as the same as probability function, the sample space as the input domain, to a value x in the set of curly script x called the range of random variable. So you can define your own range. So you map the sample space to the range of this random variable. So by doing so, for each little x is in the range of this random variable. This is known as an event. So we can interpret this as an event. Event means a subset. As a subset of the sample space, this event corresponds to this event. Little omega. Omega is in the sample space where fx is of omega is equal. Therefore, we are able to write something like this. Remember in our definition of probability, probability is defined over the sample space, right? It's not defined over random variables. Probability is defined over the sample space. Through this function, we are able to transform the definition of probability over the sample space to the definition of events that are defined. that's the important and subtle aspect. But actually, we can also space up a bit distribution for random arrival if we already know that it's defined by an online function within the X directly instead of varying online sample space. For distant probability mass function, we have this with around 0, this should sum up 1. For continuous probability density function, again, it should greater than or equal to 1, and the interval should be equal to 1. Then what's the difference between distant mass function and a continuous density function? It's symbolic. They are all represented by, right? What's the difference? So for distant probability mass function, it should be greater than or equal to 0 and less than or equal to 1 for mass function. But for density function, P F big X is equal to little X can be greater than 1 and can even be positive even. That's density function. If this density function times this small error, that will give you the probability mass approximation. Those quantities should be less than or and you should be familiar with the following fundamental concept from probability theorem: marginalization, conditioning, Bayes' rule, expectation, and classical distributions such as Bernoulli, multinomial, Gaussian, univariate Gaussian distribution, multivariate Gaussian distribution, and so on. Alright. Better separability. Now let's first define the classification task. So given a rich vector X is in Rn, now describe or represent the object belongs to one of the PC classes from the set of curly script Y. So here in our course, we are always going to use these types of curly script letters to denote the set and predict the class the object belongs to. And in the previous example, X classification, so X is petalence, separates this two-dimensional vector where n is equal to 2. And for the class set, we have only two classes, right? First a color, and the GD color, where the cardinality of this set, we put single vertical bars around a set, it means we count the number of elements of this set. It's known as the cardinality of this set. And the cardinality is the set is equal to C. But C classes, in this case, is equal to 2. And equivalently, we can treat versatile as class 1, vertical as class 2, and put 1 or add 2 in the class. And the definition of class by learning, so given a data set of example pairs, so remember curly script D represents a set, have a training set, which consists of NPM examples. In our course, we are already going to using BM to indicate the number of examples in the training set. And where we use superscript I with a bracket to index the ith example in the training set, where xi is an n-dimensional feature vector, yi is its class label, and the goal is to learn a function from Rn to the class set that I predict class label for every feature vector. So that's the definition of class by learning. So based on this definition, so here's my question. What does this symbol represent? X, I, J. Any answer? Yes. It is the jth feature of the ith count. Right? So xi is a n-dimensional vector. And j is the jth entry of the n-dimensional vector, which means that it's a jth feature of the ith count. And we're going to introduce the important indicator function. So the indicator of A is equal to 1 if event A occurs, or event A is true, or otherwise, it returns 0. So here we're going to give you some intuitive examples on the indicator function, which will be extensively used in our lectures. So the indicator function of 3 is greater than 5. So what's the result of this indicator? 0, right? Because this is false. Indicator of a false event gives you 0. So what's the indicator function of 3?
1.
Because this stands for larger than or equal to. Right? It's all relations, so that is equal to 1. And so today is Wednesday. So this is 0, right? Today is Friday. So you get the experience of the indicator function. So based on the indicator function, we are able to define the classification errors. So given the data set, D consists of M examples and the classification. is defined as follows. 1 over m, the sum of I from 1 to m, the indicator function y I is not equal to f x I. So think about this expression. So what's f x I? What is fxi? It is the ith predicted label, right? And y is a contrast label. Here the event is the predicted label is not equal to the contrast label. If this is true, it means that the classification model incorrectly predicts the ith label, right? If this event is true, this will be equal to 1, which means that we add by 1, we count the incorrect classified examples, we add it by 1. And the sum means that we count the number of incorrect predicted examples. And we normalize by m, that's the ratio. M is the number of examples. That's classification average. And similarly, by replacing inequality with equality, we get classification accuracy. If predict label is equal to the true label, this is the event. If this event is true, this return 1, we add it by 1. So here, this summation gives you the number of correctly predicted examples, normalized by m, classification accuracy. So any question on this slide? All right. So KN slavers, or KN for short. The KN classifier is one of the most basic and essential classifiers in machine learning. So it stores the whole training set and classifies each new instance using a majority of over its k nearest neighbors. And here, to represent the k nearest neighbors, we use neighbor index set. We don't store the neighbors, we store the index. The labels, the label index set. So the index should be 1, 2, up to n, right? You have a total of n examples. Therefore, the label index set is a subset of this set. And the use of kn requires choosing the distance function and the number of labels k. And here is the examples. So in these examples, we have for each data, we use two features to represent it. And the triangle is class B, the star is the class A, and this is the new example to class A. And the first step is to calculate the distance between these new examples and all examples in the training set. If this training set has n examples, we need to compute n distances. And then we sort the distances. And then identify the k nearest neighbors based on this distance. Right? And in this case, if we set k is equal to 3, and we identify this as the nearest neighbors, and based on this nearest neighbors, we perform majority vote. And in this case, we have two examples of class A plus B, 1 plus plus A. Therefore, this example is predict as class B by the principle of majority vote. Right? So any question on this example? So to write mathematically and compactly the KN classifier, we need to introduce two more math operators. The one is maximum operator. The maximum operator of a function fx defined over some input domain returns the maximum value of this function, where max respect of fx respect of x is the set consists of fx. Subject to that, this x is in the input domain, and this is a symbol for and this is symbol for or. For or, y, as another example, is also in D. Fy should be less than or equal to fx, which makes fx the largest value. And this set consists of only one element, not fx, the largest value. And we also have what's known as the argmax operator. So the argmax operator of a function defined over some input domain gives the set of points for which fx reaches the maximum value. We have argmax of fx with respect to x, which returns you a set of x instead of fx. So these are input arguments. Hence the name argmax. Arg stands for argument. So input arguments subject to x is in the input domain, and for all y, as another example, in the domain fy is less than or equal to fx. That's the difference between max and argmax. Here I'm going to give you some intuitive examples. So what's max of negative x minus 2 squares plus 5? So what's the maximum value?
2?
5. It's 5, right? So what's argmax? The argmax is in fact 2. It is 2. That attains the maximum value, 5. Right? Argmax returns the input argument that achieves the maximum value. And why we write something like this here? So the set of points for which fx reaches the maximum value. So here I'm going to give you a visual illustration. So here I'm going to define my function visually. So this is x, this is fx. And this is 2, this is 5, and this is 3. So what's max of this function? 3, right? So what's argmax of this function? Two to five, right? So the argmax of this function is in fact an interval, not a single point. So the interval 2 to 5 gonna, so any point in this interval will attain the maximum value. That's why we have the set of points for which fx reaches the maximum value instead of a single point. Then KN can be read compact as the follows. So this KN classifier takes a feature vector as input and predicts a class label, right? That's why we have argmax here. Argmax gives input arguments, which is C. It will produce either 1, 2, up to big C, right? The input is correct, the output is correct. The rest is to figure out this part. So for all I is in the labor index set, we count how many numbers, how many examples belongs to class 1, how many numbers is class 2, how many examples belongs to class 3, and so on. And we take the maximum one and return its argument as class. Right here, I'm going to give you a visual example. So this is class A, this is class B, this is example 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this is a new instance to classify. And we set the k is equal to 3. Therefore, my question is, what's the curly script kx in this case? It's 2, 3, 4, right? It's the index of the nearest neighbors. The index of these three examples, 2, 3, 4. Right? Now here, we check. So here, class A is class 1, class B is class 2. We check whether, so if the sum of I is in curly script kx, I is equal to 1. This will give you, what's the result of this function? 2, right? It will give you 2. Because when I is 2, the classification, the class is 1, this is true, they give you 1. 3, this is 2, give you 1. 4, this is 4, give you 0. The sum will give you 2. And what's the sum of I from the neighboring index set I, y, I is equal to 2? This will give you 1. Right? And due to the majority vote, the maximum value is 2. The input argument that attain the maximum value is class 1. And we return the input argument and we return class 1. So that's a simple neat expression to summarize all aspects of this neighborhood class. With the help of argmax operator, with the help of the indicator function. And in general, KN can work with any distance function, satisfies non-negativity and identity in indiscernibles. And generally, the more structured the distance type, symmetry, triangle, inequality is the more structured you can explore with design algorithms. So if a distance function that satisfies this, and this are called a metric. In mathematics, this is a proper metric. And here is a well-known example of distance metric called Minkowski distance or LP norm induced distance metric. We're given two data points. The Minkowski distance with parameter p is a proper metric. Proper metric means it satisfies the previous four conditions. As follows: d p x x prime is lower is computed by the LP norm of the x minus x prime, and is computed by the absolute value of xj minus xj prime take to the power of p, and we sum over all n entries, and we take the summation to the power of 1 minus p. That's the calculation of LP norm induced metrics. And don't forget this absolute function here. And the special case include Euclidean distance when p is equal to 2.5, distance when p is equal to 1, and the check distance when p is equal to infinity. When p is equal to infinity, xj minus xj prime. We just take the absolute value of the largest distance. So given any distance function, brute force can work by computing all distance and solve the distance to form the neighbors and do the majority of the functions. And here is some visual examples when the number of neighbors is 1, 3, 7, 15. As you see, as the number of nearest neighbors increases, so the decision boundary becomes smoother and smoother. And we may encounter some misclassification cases here. And here's my question. So when k is equal to 1, what's the training error rate for kn? When k is equal to 1, what is the training error rate? We are not talking about the validation error, test error, we are talking about training error. So when k is equal to 1, what's the training error? The training error is always going to be 0. Because in a training set, the nearest neighbor of one point is itself. Right? It's itself. It's already going to give you correct prediction. And instead of giving all the k neighbors equal weight, so in the majority of the distance weight measure can be used, or a soft distance weight where the distance is defined as follows. So here, this x function means the natural number to the power of the negative alpha to n. So those are the same notations. E to the power of negative alpha to n. So when d is small, means closer, wi is larger, closer points contribute more. Closer points contribute more. And instead of brute force nearest neighbor search, data structure like KD tree can be constructed to save computations. And in this lecture, we're not going to dive deep into KD trees because you should be able to learn KD trees in courses like data structure or advanced programming. But I will give you the high level ideas. So when we have already computed the distance between A and B, and they're very large, and we have already computed the distance between B and C, they are very small. So there is no need to compute the distance between A and C. It should be large. C cannot be the nearest neighbors of A. So KD tree allows you to explore this kind of relationships to save calculations. Right? So the advantage of KN low training period is involved. It's easy learning, we store the full data set, and there is no need to retrain the model. We can add new training data as we go, and then convert it to the correct decision surface as data goes to be ready for. And the disadvantage is double for with large data set. Performing nearest neighbor requires a lot of memory and takes a lot of time. And more importantly, does not work with high dimensions because it becomes difficult to compute the distance. And moreover, everything is far from everything else in the high dimensions. This is known as the personal dimension. Because we have so dimensions, so each dimension will give each dimension give you a little bit distance. We sum those small distances across all dimensions. That's going to be a huge. That's why everything is far from the distance. So the third is Bayesian optimum classifier. So it's one type of classifier. So probabilistic classifier is one type of classifier to model the data, model how data is generated using probability distributions, i.e. it's generating models. We model the whole generating process. So we first define the generic models. So the world has object patterns of very not the distribution features is conditioned on the class label. For different class, we have different feature distributions. It's class conditional. And for class label, we store all possible classes in the class set. For example, in the Iris dataset, we have two classes. And in the real world, the frequency that class well occurs is given by the character of VDP of Y. And in Iris block, is if P of Y is equal to 1 is equal to 0.4, P of Y is equal to 2 is equal to 0.6. So those numbers should be summed up to 1. More generally, so if C is in the Y and P of Y is equal to C should sum up to 1 to obey the second axiom of probability. And this means that so in the world of Iris block, there are 40% are class 1 and 60% are class 2. And we can learn it from data. Right? So focus on the numerator. So if C is equal to 1, so the numerator simply counts the number of examples that belong to class 1. And we divide by n, which will give you the ratio. If you replace this with 2, the numerator simply counts the number of examples that comes to class 2, normalized by n. And for observation model, we observe feature vector x, which means that the feature vector for each example is given by it. And the value of the feature depends on the class, so each, which gives you this class conditional label. Class condition distribution. P of x given 1. And here this is a high dimensional probability distribution because x in general is in a high dimensional space. It's high dimensional probability distribution. And we have again learned from our data. So here we only work with n is equal to 1 feature. So in the Iris flowers, we draw histograms of feature petal lengths for each class. And it will look something like this. So the problem is that it looks a little bit noisy. And we can focus on y is equal to 1. So how to understand this feature histogram? So here, this means that there is only one example that is petal length 3. There is 5 examples that with petal length 4. And this is how you understand this histogram. And we can normalize by the number of examples in each class to get this empirical distribution. And the problem is it looks a bit noisy. So how to solve this problem? We can assume a probability model for this class conditionals, and we estimate the parameters in the probability model. And in this case, we assume each class is modeled as a separate Gaussian distribution given by this formula. Right? And here, so pay attention to this notation. This is a conditional bar, this is a semicolon. So if some variable is behind a conditional bar, we treat this as a random variable. If some parameter, if some location is behind the semicolon, we treat it as deterministic parameters to be estimated instead of random variables. If we write something like this, x given y, comma, mu c sigma c squared, we treat this all as random variables. If there are random variables, we may have some parameter bit for mu c, parameter bit for sigma c squared. But here we treat this simply as parameters. And we know the Gaussian distribution, right? 1 over square root of 2 pi sigma squared and equal to this formula. And each class has its own mean and variance parameters. And in the Iris Flower case, we have two classes. Each class, the class condition is modeled as Gaussian distribution. And for each Gaussian distribution, we have two parameters. Therefore, there is a total of four parameters we estimate in this class condition. And this is a typical figure for Gaussian distribution, a bell-like shape, with mu is control its locations and sigma control its spread. And we can use maximum likelihood estimation to estimate the parameters in the class condition. We set the parameters is two to maximize the likelihood of the sample for class C. And here we gather all examples that belong to class C into the D subscript C class, where here yi is always going to equal to class C. Here DC contains all examples that belongs only to class C. Therefore, we are able to grasp the following optimization problem, half mass problems. We estimate mu system as squares, we add mass respect to mu system as squares, I from 1 to MC, the log likelihood P of XI given YI, semicolon mu system as squares. This is modeled as a Gaussian distribution in the previous slide, right? We can put the formula here. And how to maximize it? We take the gradient of this formula with respect to mu z and sigma c squared and set them to zero. And we solve for mu z and sigma squared, which will give you these two formulas, empirical mean and empirical variance, as expected. Alright? And here, when we use this formula as a function of x, yi, we call it class conditional. P of probability of this vector given each class. But when we view this same formula as a function of this parameter, we instead call it the negative function of the data. And we can use another location for this class condition to explicitly represent that we view this as a function of parameters. So that's two views for the same particular expression. One from data point is class conditionals. One from parameter point is negative function. And if you would like to know the details how to solve this problem, okay, please, I will upload a lecture which contains a step-by-step proof. Not for uniparameter Gaussian distribution, but for multi-parameter Gaussian distributions, for more general case, for you guys to check out. And here is a learned Gaussian class conditionals. It's much smoother than the Fisher diagram, right? And now here comes the Bayesian decision rule, or BDR for short. Bayesian decision rule makes the optimal decisions on problem in more probability or uncertainty. It minimizes the problem of making a prediction error. So to prove the optimality of Bayesian optimal classifier, so there is one page of very elegant and straightforward proof. I've also derived it and uploaded and included it into the lecture and uploaded by the others. So I highly encourage you guys to check it out. So the proof of the optimality of the Bayesian optimal classifier. So given observation feature x, pick the class C with the largest posterior probability. That's argmax C. P of y is equal to C P of x. So here, if this is larger than this, we predict as plus 1. If this is smaller than this, we predict as plus 2. Due to the Bayesian decision rule, according to the largest posterior probability. And the problem is, we don't have pure graphemates. We only have class model of pure y, or private distribution, or class condition of pure x given one. That is where the Bayesian decision rule comes into play. And the posterior probability can be calculated using the Bayes rule. So P of y given x is equal to P of the joint probability divided by P of x. The joint probability can divide according to the chain rule of probability as P of x given y times P of y given P of x. And the P of x can be computed by the rule of total probability, right? P of x is equal to the sum of C is in the class set P of xy, and this is equal to C is in the class set P of x given y times P of y. Then all four expressions are expressed in terms of class conditionals and that probabilities and by what we compute. So the denominator is a probability of x, and which can be computed by the law of total probability, and the denominator makes p of y and x sum of 1. And here is a concrete example of how to compute the denominator in the class set contains only two examples. And this is the class conditional, this is posterior probability. And what is the descendant boundary? So the descendant boundary of the two posterior probability are equal. And in this sense, we only have two classes. It should be equal to 0.5. Because those two should sum up to 1. We only have two classes, right? And then they are equal. It should be 0.5. And in this case, the descendant boundary is something around 4.8. For petal length less than 4.8, we predict as plus 1, larger than as plus 2. So this is the decision boundary. And bearing what we visited. So note that the denominator is independent of the class level 1. Right? It's only a function of class label, it's only a function of feature vector. Therefore, we can simply compare the numerator. And the numerator is in fact the joint magnitude, joint probability pure that's given one. And we have BDR, Bayesian decision rule using joint magnitude. So if this is larger than this, plus 1, otherwise plus 2. And BDR based on posterior probability, BDR based on joint magnitude will give exactly the same decision boundary. And we can also apply a monotonic increasing function at log to the comparison. Right? Using log magnitude, if this is larger than this, plus 1, otherwise plus 2. And this is numerically more stable when the magnitude is small, because for joint magnitude we need to multiply numbers that are less than 1. So if the numbers to be multiplied are large, the highly magnitude number on the problem. But log makes the product into a summation, right? Makes more numerical stable. That's why in machine learning and in numerical position or numerical linear, we always prefer to work with log magnitude instead of magnitude itself. And here is a joint magnitude, log magnitude, which give you the same decision number as expected. So here is based in classified summary training, we first collect training data for each class. And for each class, we estimate the class conditionals P of X given Y is equal to C. We select a formal distribution in the previous case we using assume a Gaussian distribution. We may assume other continuous for B distributions and estimate their parameters using MLE, maximum length estimation. We estimate the class prime using MLE as well. And for classification, given a new sample, X star we pack it is negative. And we pick the class with not a posterior population. We may equivalently use joint negatives or the sum of normal negatives. Alright? So we do have So we do have a lecture 1.3, which is a Jupyter notebook, which will give you a gentle introduction of Python notebook or Python in general. So for those who are not familiar with Python, I highly encourage you to check it out. And we leave a little bit decrease in the lecture 1.3, and I hope you to solve it. Alright? So we don't have tutorial this week, and for the 8 tutorials, we will make early announcements for you guys within the 13 weeks of teaching. Right? So that's all for today's lecture. Hope to see all of you next week.